Download Adam Sank's last comedy album on Amazon, iTunes, or Google Play.
We're already in the shower together. The risk has been taken. If I don't blow you, the risk will have been for nothing.
Warning. The program you're about to hear contains highly offensive and indecent material.
Ryan, pull down your pants.
JB, you start sucking.
The host, a comedian of questionable talent, speaks incessantly on topics of a sexual and scatological nature.
I will fuck you, but I will not eat you.
I want that fucking dick down my throat while I'm dicking him down.
Okay. I hope my mother's listening.
Your ass became a rosebud?
Yeah, that's because I got dicked down real good.
He asks questions of his celebrity guests that are highly inappropriate and rude.
Which of you has a bigger penis?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a fun, good one.
Going down on the clitoris?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I absolutely like where you're going with this.
For some reason, and the word strap-on just comes right out of my mouth, Bianca.
Yeah, you said come and strap-on at the same time.
Indeed.
And he cannot stop talking about his buttocks.
I think your butt is telling you, no mas, por favor.
This is the Adam Sank Show.
If it's in my hand, I'm going to suck it.
Powered by DNR Studios. And now...
The one, the only, Adam Sank!
Yes, welcome to the Adam Sank Show. We are not live, but this is a brand new episode. If you're listening at 11 a.m. Eastern on Saturday, March 28th in the year of the coronapocalypse at dnrstudios.com, the only place to hear this podcast live and throughout the week that it first airs. Leave us your ratings and reviews on iTunes or wherever else you listen to this thing. Email me at adam@adamsank.com. There's never been a better time to email me. You have all the time in the world to write them. I have all the time in the world to read them, and I'd really love to hear from you. Like the Adam Sank Show Facebook page. Download my comedy albums. Again, you got nothing but time. Listen to the comedy albums. They're funny. Donate to my AIDS Walk New York page. If you go to adamsank.com, there's a link right at the top. I have to tell you, just over the past week, I've gotten several donations. People are incredibly generous that at a time like this, when none of us knows what's happening tomorrow or next week or the week after, that people are still donating to a charity like GMHC. It warms my heart. Thank you so much. Please keep doing so if you can. Listen, we're doing this from my home today, but we're going to do the best ass that we can. And I actually have two amazing guests today. One is Joe DiPietro, a two-time Tony Award nominee and the co-creator of a new Broadway musical that was supposed to open on March 31st about the life and times of Princess Diana. And then we'll be talking to Daniel Lynn Evans, an actor here in New York who actually was one of Sherry Pye's alleged victims in the whole catfishing scandal that unfolded over the past month. So we'll be talking to Daniel and Joe. But first, I need to welcome an actual live co-host in my living room, defying the social distancing rules. It is our one and only sexy British announcer, Simon Mathis.
Hello, hello, hello.
Simon, thank you so much for coming.
It's absolutely my pleasure to get out of the house.
We have to tell the listeners that this is the second time we're going through the first 20 minutes of the show because the last time the microphone was turned off. And so that happened. So we did a little dress rehearsal and we're raring to go. What's your everyday life like? Tell us about it.
It's quiet. It's working from home. Everyone's trying to stay positive, and there's a lot of noise on social media, which is good and bad. I've been doing every job I've been putting off, which has mainly been cleaning, sorting, organizing, and responding to many, many, many emails.
And, you know, one of the sadder things to think about right now, I mean, there's people really suffering, so this is bullshit, but you and I, well, not you so much, but I was supposed to be performing with the New York City Gay Men's Chorus this weekend. This was our concert weekend.
Yeah, that's very sad.
And, of course, it got canceled. But if you guys go on YouTube or my Facebook page, you can watch a fantastic music video that the chorus put together. I am not in the video visually, but I am one of the people singing in the audio, because we recorded the audio first. I'm sorry, I'm just messaging our second guest that we're going to be 20 minutes late. Simon, fill time here.
that's really the worst thing to
watch. What are you watching on Netflix right now? Okay, here we go. So, we're going to start with something fun. Oh, by the way, Simon's going to be doing sound effects. JB will be adding to this show from his home in Far Rockaway. JB, we love you. We miss you. We wish you were here, but we're glad you're staying safe. So, yes, JB will be editing things like the show open and close and various things. But Simon is going to be my human sound effect machine. So our first story, Simon, and get ready to do it, is that jerking off may actually help you fight the coronavirus. Simon has pulled his big British dick out and is jerking it as we speak. That thing is really impressive. No, it's true. Masturbation causes a rush of dopamine, which is a chemical associated with our ability to feel pleasure. And along with dopamine, something called oxytocin gets released. Not OxyContin, Simon. That's different. Oxytocin, which is commonly referred to as the love hormone. Stay with me now. Oxytocin decreases cortisol, which is a stress hormone that gets released when you're freaking out. For example, during a global pandemic, when you don't know how long you're going to be stuck inside your house, and your president is a complete moron who's in denial. So they've actually studied this, and I am upset that I was not asked to be a part of this study. But
they thought you were overqualified.
Yes. Well, I mean, no one knows more about jerking off than I do. But according to Dr. Jennifer Landa, a hormone therapy specialist, masturbation can produce the right kind of environment for a strengthened immune system to thrive. Also, it produces a sticky environment. I don't know if you know that.
Well, we all have Clorox wipes, so that's helpful.
Yes, and many. Although I wouldn't advise putting Clorox on your penis.
No.
That might be a little bit toxic.
Chafing.
Chafing, yes. Now, the results of a study, and again, I wish I were part of this, confirmed that sexual arousal and orgasm increases the number of white blood cells, particularly the natural killer cells that help fight off infection. So basically, jerking off is not just for fun. It can actually make you strong and healthy and able to fight off the coronavirus should you come into contact with it.
You could be saving lives.
Your own and someone else's. Coincidentally, Simon, I after not watching porn for like over a year, I have gone back to porn. I am jerking up a storm. Sometimes I jerk once in the morning and once at night.
It's good to have a new hobby.
It really is important. And the other thing is, we want to tell our listeners who are not circumcised, make sure you use plenty of lube. I understand the uncircumcised ones, you have your own natural moisture. I'm going to pretend that I'm not disgusted by it, but it's natural and it helps you to jerk off without the use of lube. But for the rest of us, use lube. You don't want to chafe. You don't want to cause any sores. Protect that peen. In other news, this is a story I printed out March 10th at a time when we thought this could be the biggest thing that could possibly happen as a result of the coronavirus. Oh, how we were wrong. But on March 10th, it was announced that RuPaul's Drag Con had been canceled. RuPaul's Drag Con was supposed to happen. What did we discover, Simon?
May 1st, 2nd, 3rd?
1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Los Angeles. There's one in New York, too, but the LA one is like the definitive Drag Con. And because of fears over the coronavirus, they canceled it. Incidentally, this was a week after South by Southwest canceled its festival. You know, there was still controversy over at that time. You know, we're talking about 11 days ago. There was still, because we're recording this a week early, whatever. There was controversy as to, you know, are we being overly cautious? Should we cancel? Should we not cancel? Now, of course, it seems like a foregone conclusion that everything would cancel. But again, without getting too morbid and depressing, this is a real loss of revenue. Last year, over 50,000 fans attended DragCon LA. So you're talking about a revenue loss of millions, not only to the drag queens who were going to appear at DragCon and sign autographs and, you know, they get paid for everything they do there, but all the vendors, all the restaurants and hotels in the area. It's just, you know, the economic impact of this is staggering. But here's the good news, Simon. And it's a big but. Coming for your quarantine fabulousness, Digital Drag Fest 2020 is happening.
Yay! So, I zoned out by that point. Yeah. No.
So this is something that we're seeing a lot of. Performers, drag queens, singers, anyone with any kind of talent, and a lot of people with no talent, are taking to the internet and putting on performances for all of us who are stuck at home, which is most of the country.
There is a lot of content out there now.
There's a lot of content. And so here's something good that's happening. There's something called the Producer Entertainment Group, and they've announced a partnership with a webcasting site called Stage It. And they are bringing some of the biggest drag names to the web for a digital drag festival. Just listen, Simon, to some of these names that are coming. Alaska Thunderfuck, Davina DeCampo, Ginger Minj, Jackie Beat, Jiggly Caliente, Jinx Monsoon, Jujubee, Manila Luzon, Ms. Cracker, Monet Exchange, Nina West, our good friend Peppermint, whom we know and love, Sharon Needles, Sherry Vine, and Trinity the Tuck. They will all take part. Here's what's going to happen. Each of those queens will present a 30-minute, one-time-only concert with performances ranging from lip-syncing to comedy to cooking to dance, as they say in Simon's hometown. Dance. Viewers will even have the opportunity to tip their favorite performers, which we all know is important right now. Jinx Monsoon was quoted as saying, "Art endures all disasters, and with art, so can we." Tickets for Digital Drag Fest 2020, which is described as an all-ages entertainment. So Kelly Wade Milton, if you're listening, down in Florida, Anya can take part in this without fear of sex talk or swearing or inappropriate discussion, all of which she hears on this show on a regular basis. It's called Digital Drag Fest 2020. It kicks off, it's a week-long thing. Kicks off Friday, March 27th. Tickets begin at just $10. I assume you go to this website, Stage It, to get more information, or you can just Google Digital Drag Fest 2020. And speaking of drag, one of the weirdest stories to come out over the past week, and it's saying a lot that there could be anything weirder than, you know, the main story, is that RuPaul and his husband apparently own a 66,000-acre fracking farm. Fracking is a horribly damaging practice in which oil companies and natural gas companies basically drill far deep into the ground, into where the groundwater lies, and they basically mine it for minerals and natural gas and other things that they need to produce power. It is such a dangerous practice, environmentally speaking, that people who live near fracking farms describe turning on their faucets and being able to light their water on fire. Like, it's terrible. They don't even know what the long-term effects of it are. But this scandal broke because RuPaul was on NPR talking to Terry Gross, and Terry Gross, it was like a totally normal interview about drag and Drag Race and RuPaul's life. And then Terry Gross asks, "Do you have, like, horses or cattle on the farm?" And RuPaul said, quote, "A modern ranch, a 21st century ranch, is really about land management. You lease the mineral rights to oil companies, and you sell water to oil companies, and then you then lease the grazing rights to different ranchers, so it's land management, yeah." Now, to the ordinary person, we wouldn't have even, like, thought twice hearing this. We would have just kind of zoned out. But there was a PhD candidate at NYU named Rory Solomon. He's doing the dishes in his house. He's listening to the interview. And all of a sudden, he's like, wait, what did I just hear? So he went on the internet. And you can actually research where fracking is taking place geographically. And he discovered that RuPaul's ranch was a fracking hotspot. That's according to the group Frack Tracker. He also checked on Earther and found public records of the couple's ranch. It turns out that they have leased the ranch to at least three major oil companies. And these companies, like Chesapeake Energy was a pioneer of fracking. Why does this matter? Well, it matters because it's not only that RuPaul is doing something that's terrible for the environment and making a huge profit off of it, but RuPaul has positioned himself as an environmentalist. In 2018, he hosted a climate crisis-themed ball. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman who is the author of the Green New Deal, she's coming on Drag Race to be a guest judge this season. So it really is not in line with RuPaul's stated values. In fact, on the most recent episode of Drag Race, the one that aired Friday the 20th, they had a mini challenge involving bees and the disappearance of bees and what we have to do to help bees. And it's like, RuPaul, you can't be an environmentalist and own a fracking ranch. That's like, you know, what is that like, Simon? Come up with an analogy. You're quick and witty.
Very hypocritical. That's what that's like.
That's like being a gay man owning a vagina ranch. I don't know. I can't think of anything clever, but it's not good. And it's one more thing that RuPaul is going to have to answer for if and when this coronavirus crisis ever ends, because right now that's all we care about. But speaking of RuPaul, before coronavirus hit, the biggest story in the world was about Sherry Pie. Season 12 contestant Sherry Pie, who has been accused by multiple and credible young men of catfishing them and both sexually and emotionally manipulating and exploiting them. Queerty did an incredibly thorough and I thought really insightful investigation. And one of the men they interviewed was Daniel Lynn Evans. And that name jumped out at me because I've known Daniel for years. He's an actor here in New York City. He was one of Sherry's alleged victims, and he is joining us on the telephone to shed more light on this scandal. Welcome, Daniel Lynn Evans.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm sorry that we had to do this twice. We're having technical difficulties, but I think now you're being picked up by the microphone.
Awesome.
So tell us about how you first met Sherry, a.k.a. Joey Guglielmelli.
Yeah, so about, I think it was 2017, so like three-ish years ago now.
Daniel, can you just talk a little more directly into your phone?
Yeah. How's that? Is that better?
A little bit.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, it was fall of 2017. One of the owners of Rebar, which was a bar that had just opened in Chelsea, in the space where G-Lounge used to be, approached me and wanted me to do, like, a Broadway-style, like, Musical Mondays, like they used to do at Splash back in the day.
Yeah.
And I was gonna, you know, be the host and provide sassy commentary and yada yada, whatever, you know, one of those things. So then, after we had talked about it a few times, the other owners decided that they wanted more than just a guy, like more than just like a Broadway boy per se, and they wanted some sort of drag queen attached to it. So I don't know who knew who, but I was given Sherry Pie's information so that we could meet up and figure something out and see what kind of a show we could come up with. And then when we met and we ended up chatting about the show, she and I had totally different views of what the show should be. She basically, I wanted to, you know, just walk around with a microphone and make sassy comments. And she's full-blown drag girl. So it didn't go too well between the two of us. She ended up doing the show with herself, and then they got another guy. It was a guy that she had known who was a bartender at the Ritz at the time, and they ended up doing the show together. So then, like, about, like, a week or two after it all kind of happened, I got a message from her on Instagram that was like, hey, so sorry things didn't work out, but I have this other project you might be interested in. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
I'm sorry, Daniel, tell us again what date did this happen? What year?
It was 2017. It was, like, I want to say September 2017.
Okay, and I just want to point out that Sherry Pie claimed that once she moved to New York, she basically stopped doing this, and you're here to say that it absolutely had not stopped as recently as 2017.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean,
Oh, wait, we're losing you a little bit, Daniel.
Oh, sorry. So the guy, Danny, that she ended up doing the show with, she was doing it, she was catfishing him as well. With this Allison fake casting director character.
Right, but I interrupted you. So she approaches you about this other project.
Yeah, and she's sending me Instagram messages, and she's being kind of vague. I assumed on purpose, but she was saying, she was like, oh, you have a great body and everything, but for this project, they're going to want you to get bigger. And I was like, okay, well, like, you know, I go to the gym and I do things. And she was like, yeah, but they'll want you to get, like, bigger quick. And it was kind of as if she was, like, she was trying to get me to say something about steroids. But I just kind of wasn't taking the bait. But she, you know, she even said, she was like, oh, this, I'm friends with this casting director, Allison, what's her name, and, you know, she uses me to help, find people, basically. And I just kind of, I never really fully engaged with her, so I never really fully took the bait. Because, you know, at that time, I think I was already in my early 30s, so I was kind of in the performer mindset of like, okay, well, like, you know what my resume is, like, you have my information.
So you put a stop to this almost immediately, which makes you one of the lucky ones. When did you discover that other men had been through similar experiences, or worse?
Yeah, so I guess it was a few weeks ago. I had just got back from a trip.
Wait, we lost you again, Daniel.
Oh, sorry. A few weeks ago, I had just got back from a trip. My boyfriend and I were visiting his family in England. And as soon as I walked into my apartment, my roommate was like, oh my God, have you been following the drama? And I was like, what drama? I've been on a plane for 8 hours. and he went up to Facebook and showed me the original poster's post, like the first guy to say anything. And I didn't even get through halfway of reading it before I realized, wait a second. I was like, this seems really familiar. And I pulled out my phone and went back into my old Instagram messages. And I was like, holy shit, here it is. Like, this is exactly what she was trying to do to me.
So it wasn't until it broke widely to the public that you knew you were not the only one, because we've been told that it was kind of an open secret in New York nightlife that Sherry had catfished all these people, but you honestly thought you were the only one?
I didn't even realize it was a catfish situation until I read the guy, Ben, I think his name is, until I read Ben's post. I had no idea. I hadn't even thought about it, you know, because, just the way it was, the way she was talking about it, and also because she knew that I'm a professional in the industry. Like, when she and I had met, I just got through doing an off-Broadway show that I was in for a full year. So, you know, it wasn't like I was I wasn't like a young, hungry, doing any and everything that I can to try to make it into business. Like, I was already here. I've been in New York for 12 years. So it literally, honestly, didn't even occur to me until I read Ben's post. And as soon as he started like describing the way that she like approached him about it, I was like, oh, this is so familiar.
You know, as I said, you're one of the lucky ones in that you didn't fall for it, you didn't send her naked videos, you didn't take steroids, and so forth. But do you still? Is there a part of you that still feels like exploited by all this?
Not necessarily exploited. I we've all had the hookup apps and everything else for the last however many years. I personally, I feel like I get catfished a lot on those. And like, not even on the apps, not even on like Grindr and Scruff or whatever, but like, I get catfished on Facebook, where I get people with fake profiles trying to get me to send them my, you know, nudes and videos and whatever else. So I definitely take a lot of personal offense to just catfishing in general, because I guess I don't feel exploited by this Sherry Pie situation specifically, but I think I can empathize with the boys who did, because I've been catfished so many times. It's not
but,
even funny.
But to me, this is worse than regular catfishing. Regular catfishing is terrible, but this is worse to me, right? Because, especially in the case of these really young guys who are just starting out in their early 20s, you're fucking with their dreams too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and the whole premise of catfishing is like a power thing. It's not, you know, she's not just getting off on videos of guys doing steroids or whatever. Like, when she's full blown manipulating someone's life, that's a power hungry thing. That's like a sociopath thing. And like I said, I just take great offense to all of it.
How do you feel about the decision of World of Wonder to, you know, air the season as is, albeit with their disclaimer and disqualifying Sherry Pie from the finale. Do you think they did the right thing?
I think yes. I think they did the exact best thing that they could have done in this situation. I think, especially with, you know, last week's episode, she ended up winning the episode, and there wasn't one single clip of her.
Right, you barely saw her.
In the whole thing. Yeah, they sliced them guys to right out of it, and I think that was the best thing for them to do. Because, you know, the other 12 queens deserve their time, and all of the people who... And not just the queens, the designers that designed the wigs and the outfits and everything, like, they all, you know, deserve their 5 minutes as well.
Absolutely. Well,
I think World of Wonder definitely made the right decision.
Well, it's a wild story. I'm glad that you were not drawn into it and beyond what you were. And I wish you well and continued good health during the corona apocalypse.
Oh, yes, thank you. I think my mental health is going to be the hardest thing to get by. This is not a time to be an extrovert, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, keep broadcasting on social media. That's the only way to keep yourself sane right now, I think, is to stay connected mm-hmm. virtually to other people.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, sweetie, thanks for coming on. Be well.
All right, thanks for having me. Bye.
All right, Daniel Lynn Evans. Sorry, but I don't know how the audio was for that, Simon. I think I may have been holding the phone the wrong way for the first half of the interview. I'm not the most technologically savvy person in the world. But that's such a crazy story, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is you sort of watch the episodes now, and you can't help but wonder, like, would I have looked at this person differently if I'd not known this? Because you see the performances, and... it's a good, solid performance. And then, but that's all you can think about when you see it. And which is also why it's so good that this stuff's brought to light, because it helps you to kind of, you can see some traits. Maybe you can spot things in your own life with certain people who behave in certain ways and certain characteristics.
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking, like, is there any redemption for Sherry Pie? Can Sherry Pie ever come back? And I just don't think there is. I think to do this for so many years and in such an elaborate way indicates that one really is... I mean, listen, I don't want to diagnose someone I don't know, but that's a sociopath.
Yeah.
When, as Daniel said, it's all about power and control. And when you get off on controlling other people... who don't even know that you're controlling them, like, that's sick, man. Mm-hmm. I hope she gets the help. I hope Joey gets the help he needs. I hope anyone who is troubled and damaged gets the help they need. But, and I'm not a big fan of cancel culture, but I think Sherry Pie's canceled forever.
Yeah, I think as a public figure, performer, entertainer, I think, yeah, done.
Okay, in other news... and I'm actually curious to get your opinion on this, Simon, and the listeners as well. So one of the things that happened right before the shit really hit the fan with the pandemic is Winter Party happened in Miami. It's a week-long circuit party. They've had it every year for years. It's a fundraiser, but it's primarily a chance for, you know, hot, shirtless gay men to gather and take lots of drugs and fuck each other's brains out for a week in Miami. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Anyway, when it happened this year, we already knew about Wuhan. Italy was heating up. There were already warnings. But it wasn't where we are today, right? March 4th is very different from March 21st or March 28th. So they went ahead with it. And it actually, it's organized by the... I hope I don't get this wrong. I think it's organized by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. Anyway, all of this is to say that a number of men who attended Winter Party have now tested positive. And have, even the ones who haven't tested positive because they haven't taken a test, are showing symptoms of COVID. And the task force has come under fire for refusing to cancel the event. The executive director of the task force, Ray Carey, defended their decision to go ahead with the Winter Party. She said, "The task force made the most informed decision we could at the time, but we understand why people are upset. We were working with the most current information about COVID-19. The Washington Blade interviewed one of the attendees who is now ill, and he told the newspaper that many of his friends were experiencing flu-like symptoms since attending the event. The question is, people are really angry, not just at the task force that organized this event, but also at the people who attended. They're saying that they were irresponsible, they were selfish, they were reckless, they shouldn't have attended. And I'm saying, I don't know if that's true, because at that time, this wasn't what it is now. Simon, your thoughts?
I think it's always the expression of hindsight's a wonderful thing. If I knew then what I know now, it's why we rely on good governance and people who in charge who get more information and have a greater understanding of these things. I mean, when we look back on this in the future, I think it's going to be a question of, did the government do enough? Were events closed down quickly enough? Because obviously every company that's running these things, they have a huge amount invested in it. There's a huge amount of people relying on this as income and work. And if you don't have that information, then how do you know which choice you're making? So it's very easy to look at this point and go, oh, they should have known. It's like, well, companies are only closing their doors this weekend. It was before the Broadway theaters all started shutting. So all these decisions started happening after this event.
That's right. Like, when the Winter Party happened, life was pretty normal for most Americans. This was on the horizon, and it was a threat, and we knew about it. But, like, friends of mine were booked on a gay cruise that was supposed to leave yesterday, Friday, March 20th. And they were planning to go. Right up until the final week, they were planning to go, and the cruise ship was still operating. So if you're booked to go on a cruise and the cruise ship says it's fine, then why would you think otherwise? Of course, that seems insane today, but again, every day is like a whole new world, and certainly every week is a whole new world. So I understand people are looking for others to blame, and I do think, you know, I have a lot of feelings about the teenagers on spring break right now in Florida who are still partying on the beach and at hotels and bars. And I don't know why Florida hasn't shut everything, which they should. But again, like, today is very different from 2 weeks ago. And when you're talking about March 4th through 10th, when you had the President of the United States continuing to say that this is not a threat and everything's going to be normal and don't worry about it, I don't see how you can blame gay men from going to an event that was taking place as scheduled. Incidentally, at the event, there was comprehensive signage with CDC information about practicing good hygiene, and alcohol-based hand sanitizer was available throughout the event. But again, at an event that's going to lead to tons and tons of sex, hand sanitizer can only go so far.
And I think, I mean, people are looking for an outlet for their own anger and frustration at the moment, and everyone being trapped at home, and there's a lot of online warriors and a lot of people with their opinions who are desperate to share them. And how much does that help by blaming people who are in that situation?
Right. And in a way, it reminds me of the early days of the AIDS crisis when people were blaming gay men for spreading this. And you know what? Gay men were spreading this, but we didn't have the information. We didn't know. I mean, I wasn't there. I was a child. I wasn't yet sexually active, although I wanted to be. But it's that again. It's like, ooh, you're infected and it's the whole Typhoid Mary thing. And I think it's one thing today to, even if you could, which you can't, but to attend some like crazy party event with hundreds of people where you're going to all be dancing and kissing and fucking, like, that would be insane. March 4th through 10th, not that insane. Okay, moving on. This, Simon, is my all-time favorite story about the coronavirus. This one made me so happy. Bear with me. It doesn't sound that funny at first. So Spain is one of the countries that's under a very strict lockdown. They're under a big self-quarantine rule. You know, Spain borders Italy, and Italy, one of the hardest hit countries by the coronavirus. So Spain is taking no chances, and you are only allowed to leave home for emergency services, food, or to walk your dogs. There's this exception that people with pets, or mascotos, as they're known in Spain, can go outside for limited walks so that pets can relieve themselves. Well, someone in Spain really wanted to leave his house and thought that he could do so disguising himself as a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So he dressed up in this giant Tyrannosaurus Rex costume. This was in Murcia, Spain. And he was immediately encountered by police who are monitoring the streets, patrolling the streets, making sure no one's out and about who doesn't need to be. And on the video, you can see a police officer confronting the T-Rex, who eventually slinks away after seemingly being told to go back inside. But what the police in Murcia did that was so great is they posted the video of this. There's aerial video of this Tyrannosaurus Rex costumed person walking down the street. And they added the theme from Jurassic Park to the video. So as you're seeing this guy walk down the street, you're hearing... so hilarious. And they put up they tweeted in Spanish that even though pets are allowed outside, Tyrannosaurus Rexes are not covered under this rule and should stay inside. On a serious note, coronavirus has killed more than 1,000 people in Spain as of this recording. I'm sure it's gone up since then. And but thank God people still have a sense of humor. I salute the person in the Tyrannosaurus Rex costume, and I really salute the police in Murcia, Spain, for keeping their sense of humor. And now it's time for our weekly LGBTQ Pride Roundup. Hit it, Ann Steele. Well, obviously, this is not going to be a normal LGBTQ Pride Roundup because not only are all current prides canceled or postponed, but there are serious questions as to how all Pride celebrations this year, this coming year, are going to happen, if they happen at all. The organizers of LA Pride announced that all of their Pride celebrations have been canceled, and that's particularly sad because it was their 50th anniversary. New York just had our 50th anniversary this past year. LA's was going to be this year. But LA canceled their Pride. Austin, Texas, as I said earlier, put the kibosh on South by Southwest, I think that's what it's called, concert. Let's see what else is going on. New York City's, which is, you know, New York City Pride is at the end of June. They're still moving forward for now, but San Diego Pride says they're moving forward with informed and cautious optimism. San Francisco says that as of now, their 50th anniversary Pride will go on as scheduled June 27th through 28th, although they're beginning to look at options for what celebrations might look like if the social distancing practices continue. In Europe, the effects were already being felt, of course. The Bucharest Pride, which would have been their first Pride rally, they had to postpone. Trans Pride Scotland was canceled. You know, it's no surprise that this is happening all around the world. And we'll just have to see. Again, there may be virtual celebrations. There may be online celebrations with people dressed up in rainbow costumes and hoisting martinis on their Instagram and Facebook and Twitter feeds. But in any case, let's all stay proud, let's all stay strong and happy. And it's time now for our second guest segment, and I am very, very excited that he's with us today in spite of the current pandemic. He's a two-time Tony Award winner. He won those awards for writing both the book and the lyrics for the musical Memphis. And until the coronapocalypse hit, he was busy getting ready to open his new Broadway musical, Diana, which is based on the life of Diana, Princess of Wales. Please give a warm-ass welcome to Joe DiPietro. Joe, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you surviving? Let's get that out of the way.
Me and my partner, we are doing fine. We're just locked in like everyone else and, dealing with it. So all is well.
The good news is that you have a partner. Us single gals are having a tough time right now.
I know, yes. And I know someone who literally just met someone and they got, suddenly moved in and got married. Everyone thought it was way too quick. And now everyone's like, well, lucky you. You just got in under the wire.
Yeah, I'm looking for that. I'm looking for an instant husband. So if anyone out there would like to apply for the job, email me at adam@adamsank.com. All right, Joe, let's start with the heartbreaking part of this story, which is that Diana, the musical, was in previews. It was set to open March 31st. I saw the show and loved it. I predicted it was going to be a huge hit. And then on March 5th, your whole world changed. Tell me what happened on that day.
Well, we were, it was like the second, we were just starting, or in the midst of the second week of our preview period. We started, as you do in previews, you usually rehearse during the day, and you work on technical issues or little tweaks and changes you want to make, and the director works with the actors. And, you know, we all knew something was coming by, this was just a week ago Thursday. And suddenly, about 2 hours into the rehearsal, about 2 o'clock, the producer came in and said, "All right, everybody, we need to gather," and basically said, "Broadway is shutting down tonight, and you know, Diana will be back. We're on a pause, as they say." But it was, you know, heartbreaking. It was, you know, had to be done, obviously, and you could feel the last two or three performances. Parts of the audience, people who bought tickets, started not showing up, which is very unusual. And you could feel nervousness in the audience, too. So it just was a weird time. But, you know, we sort of, and then as we literally went from rehearsing to 10 minutes later, watching the crew suddenly wrap up the costumes and shut down all the technical elements, you know, in the middle of a rehearsal. So it was surreal and heartbreaking because working on the show for a long time, and we've been in rehearsal for 6 weeks, and you know, I especially felt bad for a lot of the young cast who are super talented, and I think there were 9 Broadway debuts, and you know, for them to have this happen is after years of work and sort of accomplishing the dream of being on Broadway, suddenly it's you know, thrown into uncertainty. So that's sort of what happened, but everyone took it with you know, as much professionalism and good humor as they can, and then all the cast went up to their dressing rooms because they all had liquor in there, which, you know, for people when they visit, so yeah, they all drank all the liquor. So, so they had a little party.
Absolutely. Joe, this is an unprecedented situation, right? We've never been here before. Absolutely. Has anyone told you guys what happens to the show if, let's say, a month from now, Broadway reopens? Does Diana just... Do you pick up where you left off? Is there a way to restart it?
Yes, there is a way to restart it. And I actually had talked to our producer, Beth Williams, who has been nothing but fantastic. And basically, if the show has enough money in the bank, you basically cut costs as much as you can. The Broadway League, which is all the producers of the individual shows, just came to a deal with all the unions. And I don't know the specifics, but it's been announced, and they're going to pay them for a couple weeks and have health insurance for a month. And then it also goes for the crew, and then, you know, there's a lot. It's a big village, a Broadway musical. So we're a big Broadway show. So all of that happens, and basically then you sort of tighten your belt, and, you know, you hope that this is obviously when this pandemic is over, I do think people will come roaring back. But yeah, we're right now on pause. Our show is in good shape. A couple plays announced closing because they just didn't have the, it was just not possible for them to continue. But, you know, it also takes, basically, if this is 3 or 4 months later, which I would guess it's probably going to be, you have to go back into rehearsal, right? You know, people aren't just going to be able to just pick up where they left off the day before. You have to rehearse it. You have to remember what you have.
Right.
In part, so you have to make sure everyone's safe on stage again. So it'll take a week or two, but we'll be able to get back up fairly quickly, I think. You know.
I hope so. I really hope that. I mean, for your sake, for the sake of all the actors and the technicians and everyone who works on the show, I hope that all the shows that were on Broadway come back. But I really want people to see this one, and let's move on to something happier, which is the creation of the show itself. This is your second collaboration with David Bryan, who some people will recognize his name because he's the keyboard player for Bon Jovi. How is it that you teamed up with him again to create Diana?
Well, I had worked with David on Memphis and a couple of other a show called The Toxic Avenger, which played off Broadway.
I love that show.
Thank you. Yeah, we were looking. It's real fun. Anyway, so we were looking for something else to do, and I'm a big history buff, and I read a lot of biographies. And I just, and I sort of am the same age as Diana would have been if she had lived. And I've always been fascinated by her, and I started reading about her. And then as one does, I got sort of fascinated and started reading a lot about her and going down the internet research black hole. And I just kept thinking, God, she's a fantastic idea for a musical. She was so inspiring, and she really, was entered into a fraudulent marriage and was expected to be the good, obedient girl who did exactly what everyone told her to do, and that just wasn't her. You know, she really wanted one thing, which was for Charles to love her, and the whole world loved her except for Charles. So, obviously she had a lot of issues that sort of drove her mad for a bit, but then she really fought back and found her own voice and started doing remarkable charity work and really was a quite inspirational figure to a lot of people. So I just thought, what a great idea for a musical, and I was, I immediately think, who should I write this with? And I thought, well, she's an 80s pop princess, how about an 80s pop rock and roll star? So I immediately called David. I said, what do you think about this? And he goes, I love it. And he said, I used to have it, her picture on my wall. I'm like, oh, okay. So we just started, writing, and the first number we wrote was a song for Queen Elizabeth called An Officer's Wife, because I was like, we're two guys from New Jersey. How do we write, how do you make Queen Elizabeth sing? And I knew she had to be in the show. So we picked sort of the hardest song for us to write. And we wrote that, and we both liked it, and we thought, okay, we can give musical voice to these people.
I think it was a stroke of genius to have David Bryan as the composer, because it really, the show is very much a time capsule of the 1980s. And yeah. So when you hear those 80s rock chords and you see the fabulous costumes, I mean, every one of Diana's most iconic looks is recreated to perfection on that stage. To me, yeah. I just was grinning from ear to ear for the whole show. What are the challenges, though, in telling a story that almost everybody over the age of 30 knows, or at least thinks they know? How do you find new things? Because I did discover new things about Diana's life that I didn't know. But what's the challenge in telling a story that's so familiar already?
Well, I think that's exactly the challenge, is how do you tell a familiar story? And how do you also tell a story about people who are so in the public consciousness, and three of them are still very much alive and in the, you know, in the news all the time, and how do you tell that story? The key for me was when I started reading about Diana, I always thought Camilla came after. I thought he
Me was, too.
Like Camilla after the, didn't you get right? So I was like, oh, and when I found out that Camilla was around before Diana, and Camilla helped pick Diana out, and they picked her out because they thought she was perfectly cast, and they could mold her into whatever they wanted her to be. They basically thought she would just listen to whatever they said. So Charles could have his mistress and his wife, and she would just be happy to be a princess. And then she was. She wanted more than that. And that's how I thought, oh, I'm going to tell the story of a love triangle. And so, as you know, what we did in the story is we cut out it's really a story about a marriage and how a woman gets out of a fraudulent marriage on her own terms. So I cut out everything except for the story parts about the marriage. So there's no Fergie, there's no Prince Philip, there's nothing else. It's really about Diana in this, how she emerges triumphant from a marriage.
How conscious are you as you're writing the book to this musical of the fact that Diana's two sons, who had to go through the trauma of her death and also just growing up in a tabloid hell that they still occupy, how conscious are you of okay, how are they going to feel about this? Or do you have to just kind of divorce yourself from that and serve the art?
Well, I think you definitely have to, tell your story and serve the art and make, ultimately David and I are entertainers and we want to make a rollicking, entertaining show first and foremost. But we were very respectful of the two boys. The two boys are not in the show. They're just referred to. And, you know, there's a couple. But that was purposeful. We didn't want to actually interfere with their, you know, they were young. They're sort of, and people say, well, will they come see the show? I'm like, no one's going to come see a show about their parents' terrible divorce, right? No one's going to see that. So we did, but we wanted to be respectful and make sure we deal with Diana as a mother. And she was, no matter what anyone thinks of her, she was clearly a wonderful mother. I mean, those two kids really turned out well.
Yes.
When you hear them speak. So we were very respectful of them. They're not in the show. They're referred to. And we also wanted to make a show where if they did somehow see it, like, they would be very happy about a very honest but very respectful portrayal of their mother.
Joe, my co-host today is Simon Mathis, who's actually a loyal British subject. And I'm... Yes. I'm wondering.
I guess I heard that.
Yes.
I'm wondering, Simon, how you feel the English public would react to this show if and when it comes to the West End.
I have no idea. I mean, Diana is one of those sort of ongoing phenomenon. It's of the constant sort of Daily Mail, if only Diana were here type aspect of things, that she's still a current figure in sort of in daily conversation, which is, well, not, you know what I mean? It's like she's still a current reference, even all these years later. I'm curious, did anyone from the palace reach out to you? Has there been any contact at all, especially once this was going on to Broadway?
None whatsoever. The most interesting, and two things. One is that, you know, Diana, I think, in America is just beloved, right? Like, we think of her as all the wonderful charity work, and I sort of remember her shaking the hands of the AIDS patients when no one was doing that and holding the baby with AIDS. So most Americans' feelings for her are nothing but admiration. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in Britain doing another show, and I was talking to some of the actors in the show, and I just casually mentioned what I was doing, and they were both aghast that I would actually take on this subject, and they wanted to know what my political feelings about Diana was. And I was like, oh, we don't have political feelings about Diana in America. Like, she's not political at all. Well, there are royalists in London, and there are people who love her, and there are people who think the Queen killed her, and there are all sorts of
conspiracy
ideas about
theories,
Diana.
Yeah.
Yeah, which really surprised me. So, which is one of the reasons that we started the show here in America, because we thought, oh, that is a hotbed of controversy, which is never bad for a show, but who knows how they'll react to that. So
what I find interesting, yeah, Joe, is that, and I think you guys did a really nice job of balancing this, but at the time, Charles was very much seen as the villain of the piece, and Camilla especially was seen as the absolute villain, and yet...
Right.
My sense nowadays, at least in the United States, I don't know about the UK, but my sense is that people have come to really embrace Charles and Camilla as a loving couple and sort of as a legitimate couple and say, oh, this is how it should have been the whole time. As much as we love Diana and wish she were still here, this is who Charles should have been with all along. Do you get that sense in England, Simon?
Yeah, I think there's definitely been a rehabilitation and a re-understanding, and also... I think people are just a little more sympathetic to what the time and the period and the expectations were for them in the early 80s.
Yeah, and we deal in the show, as you know, we deal in the show with trying to portray what the situation was where Diana... Remember, Diana was 19 years old when all this happened. She went from being a preschool kindergarten helper to the most famous woman in the world, literally overnight. And imagine what that is like to anyone. And she thought she was entering a real marriage, whereas Charles was forced into the marriage. He never wanted to do it, but he felt he had to do it for the duty of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So we do deal, you know, as one thing I read about him was, and he was born and bred to be an old man. Like, all of his, you know, interests were listening to a Russian cellist in the palace and reading these very heady books. Diana was a 19-year-old kid, and she wanted to go out and listen to Boy George and have a good time with her friend.
Yeah.
So we're a mismatch from hell in many ways.
All right, Joe, in the time remaining, it's time to play everyone's favorite quiz show, Ask Me No Questions.
Okay.
Ask Me No Questions.
What is your favorite Broadway musical of all time?
1776.
Really?
It was my first show I ever saw, and I still think it's the best.
Whoops. Sorry, my soundboard is going crazy here. I'm doing everything myself. Okay. Next question. Okay. When can we expect you... When can we expect to see your next musical, Fergie?
About 1,000 years from now.
No interest in a Fergie sequel.
No interest. God bless her. Not, I'm done with royalty after this one.
Okay, how do you feel about straight people working in musical theater?
I think we're open to all types of people, even unusual people like straight people.
I'm personally offended by it.
There you go.
I think they have no right to be there. Oh, by the way, I should mention, Joe, that the night that I saw Diana, my friend and I were in the orchestra on the far left side of the theater, and at one point we saw Prince Charles' naked ass backstage.
Oh, yeah. I think you saw the show early. We actually, yes. One thing you do in previews is you learned, oh, the print changes need to be... better disguise. So yes, we disguised that. Having said that, that was a bonus for you because he does. Our Prince Charles actually has a very hunky body.
He is so beautiful. What's the actor's name?
Roe Hartshorn. Believe it or not.
Really terrific and a great ass. We enjoyed it. Okay, give us your best impression of Queen Elizabeth.
Today, you should all social distance with everyone else. I'll be with Prince Philip in the palace having a gin and duvenay. Cheers.
Perfect.
That's well done. Simon is impressed.
Okay.
Simon just bowed his head.
I did. I just curtsied.
There you go. I might be the second cover for Queen Elizabeth now. Who knows?
I think you should be. Joe, now that you're working from home, are you naked?
No, I am in sweatpants covered in dog hair.
Similarly, I am as well. I found sweatpants has been my daily uniform since this crisis began. Although today, because Simon was coming over, I put on jeans.
No, it's interesting. It's interesting that my friend, because I essentially self isolate all the time because I'm a writer, so I work at home. So all my friends who are still at home are asking, like, how do you do it? What's your secret? So yeah, I'm used to it at least.
Any plans to write a musical about Diana Vreeland or Diana Ross?
Well, Diana Ross has already been written, right? Dreamgirls, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Diana Vreeland. I love Diana Vreeland. You never know. You know, designers, you know, because of the costumes are interesting. So, that's, I never thought of that.
I think you should cover all the Dianas. That should be your life's work.
Then we can do, like, you can play in rest, and you can have one person play all of it. Somehow.
Exactly.
Love it.
Joe, if and when Diana comes back to Broadway, everyone should see it. In the meantime, do you want people to follow you on social media? How can they find out more about you?
I am on Facebook under my name and Twitter also under my name. So I don't social media a lot, but I'm trying to do more now that everyone is stuck at home. But thank you.
I thank you so much for being on. I wish you and everyone else on Broadway all the luck and love in the world, and I hope that this crisis ends quickly because Broadway is my favorite thing about living in New York.
Mine too. Thank you so much. Fred, Broadway will rise again, so hopefully as soon as possible.
Joe DiPietro, thank you so much. And Simon, thank you for joining me today on the Adam Sank Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We had a few technical glitches, but
we
recovered, and maybe you'll be here with me again next Saturday if neither of us is showing symptoms. We will have a brand new ass next Saturday. I plan to do a full hour-long show every week just like this. And during the week, I might do some mini episodes like I did last week that are released to everyone immediately. That said, subscribe to this podcast at dnrstudios.com. Don't forget to download Adam Sank's last comedy album and my first album, Adam Sank Live from the Stonewall Inn. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam Sank. Do you want to plug anything, Simon?
No, I'm good.
And email me at adam@adamsank.com. Guys, have a great week. Stay healthy. Stay safe. Stay as far away from people as you can. But keep loving everyone and yourselves. See you next week.
Bye.